Science can't explain everything. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Thank you for joining me, everyone, and welcome to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Sit back, grab yourself some popcorn, and let's get started.
Be careful what you wish for.
Good evening, everyone, and as they say, let's get started. Tonight we are finishing part two with Mr. Sean Graham. Once again, Sean is a near-death experiencer. He is also the host and producer of the popular show Chasing the Truth and can be heard on YouTube Live on Wednesday and Saturdays evenings. So please sit back and relax because here we go. We are now finishing the interview with Mr. Sean Graham.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
That day was kind of crazy, but I got out and was driving around, come back, and I was cutting across a section of I was actually going on to a roundabout, and yeah. The weird caveat to this was I always had a flash of something is going to happen at this particular junction.
Yeah.
For years and years.
Yeah.
And this is where I was in this car accident that I caused because I was a drunk driver. And I paid for all of that socially and, you know, all that stuff. So I'm free and clear of that with the state of Tennessee. So no big thing with that. I did not hurt anybody. I was the lion's share of who got hurt.
Okay.
So I woke up, the front of my Kia Sportage was totally disheveled. My left shin was stuck underneath the dashboard to the point where I actually physically had to, hit my knee to get it out from underneath the dashboard.
God.
So I pop out. Now the whole thing of cops come and get arrested and move to, they took me to the ER, to examine the leg, and I had this big, huge, honking, deep bruise, and the ER doc said, this is going to get worse before it gets better, kind of deep bruise, did the whole thing. So 7 days later, I spent the night in jail. My brother came and got me. And 7 days later, I got necrotizing fasciitis, the fleshing bug on the knee. And if at that seventh day, which was the day after Thanksgiving in 2015, my leg looked like Freddy Krueger got a hold of it. And it turned gangrene. And I called my sister. I don't know. I was half in, half out of that day. And she finally winds up with my nephew. How I got out, I can sort of remember getting out of the house, hopping, and getting into the car. And driving to the hospital, ER, and getting out of the hospital into a wheelchair. And I can remember getting put on the stretcher, and when my left leg hit, it was like a watermelon, a ripe watermelon popping open. you know, all kinds of craziness pops. You know, you get that little gasp kind of, you know, people that saw it gasp kind of deal.
Yeah.
But at that time, you know, it was hit and miss how my memory functioned. I can remember what happened. My brother shows up, my sister, and a doctor that I've known forever and a day that did surgery, mm-hmm. you know, where I was associated with this particular hospital, mm-hmm. Comes in and says, Sean, you've got about a 30 to 40% chance of surviving the operation. Mm-hmm. Not surviving anything, just surviving the operation. So, of course, here I am thinking, okay, oh boy, you just got death sentence. Mm-hmm. So I say, you know, say the sinner's prayer, Father, you know, please forgive me all my sins. I'm sorry. Kind of deal. And he, the doc pushes a bunch of pain medication on me. He says, you know, name your power of attorney. Mm. And my sister was the first person in front of me. And said, okay, sis, will you take it? She said yes. And then I can remember falling asleep and then being in darkness. And that's when the near-death experience starts.
Okay. All right, so now you're in this situation. Are you? I presume you're pumped up on a lot of drugs. I mean, in terms of...
I would assume so.
Yeah, I mean, probably absolutely would have been in, like, morphine and all the... Whatever it took to do the amputation.
Actually, I went through two amputations during the first 3 days.
Mm, my God.
They did a below-the-knee amputation, and from what I was told... they had to go back and do above the knee mm-hmm. to do the whole thing. And I can honestly tell you, they did, I'm surprised I still have what little bit I have left of the leg.
Yeah.
So.
So tell us a little bit about, all right, so you're definitely now in a state of, oh my God. What do you recall as some of your first memories of when all this began?
I woke up in total, utter darkness and abyss.
Okay.
I did not have a body.
Okay.
I did not have, I tried to scream.
Yeah.
No voice.
Okay.
Tried to say, well, do I have arms? Do I have a leg? And nothing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The only thing that existed there was my consciousness.
Okay.
And I did a little bit of a life review during the... People's asked me about how long I was in there, and I was mm-hmm. like, lifetimes, mm-hmm. you know, or just half a second.
Yeah.
You know, either or, whichever, you know,
right.
snap of a finger, I was out of it, you know, or lifetimes in it.
Right.
And before I started writing about it, which was 144 days ago, actually, to mm-hmm. the day, mm-hmm. Before that, I sort of kind of remember bits and pieces, but it was all darkness up until I woke up. I've drifted in and out of consciousness, I remember, inside this void. I would wake up and, like, still dark and yell, and nobody would respond, or I couldn't even hear my own self.
Yeah.
You know, I couldn't even hear myself breathe, or if you're in a calm, you know, quiet area, you can hear your heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't even hear that.
Yeah.
Then, after a time, you know, insert whatever time frame that makes sense to you.
Yeah.
I see this big giant eye pop up from front of me, just a singular eye.
Hmm.
And it was a reptilian eye. It opens up right in front of me and then slowly closes. And I'm like, okay, what the heck was that?
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's like, well, that's new.
Yeah.
You know, totally darkness for lifetimes. And then that eye pops open. And then, you know, it wasn't lifetimes. It was a fair amount of time. Can't put a time frame there. Another one opens up, but in a different position relative to me. And then another one pops up over here. You know, speed forward, you know, I'm surrounded in it like I'm in the middle of the snow globe
mm-hmm.
with eyes, all reptilian, opening and closing.
Hmm.
Then I have this, it was like mind speak.
Okay.
Saying, actually, this was the first story I started writing about when I started writing. I remember something asked me, why did you pick up that Coca-Cola bottle cap off the railroad track? And this was when I was like 5 years old. I was in a little coal camp called Dunbar, Virginia, with my aunt, my late aunt there. And she sent me down the railroad track to this little feed store in Dunbar. And I can remember in great detail, I actually wrote about 15, 16 pages on that, that first day. About the particular incident. And I thought to myself, well, this must be, I'm dead. I must be dead. They know that kind of fine detail. Well, this must be an angel talking to me or God talking to me or whatever. So I answered. Not that particular one. That was actually the last. I'm sorry. I jumped ahead of the game. That was actually the last one. The first one was me being in. That was the one that exited me out of the near-death experience. I'm sorry. The first one that they asked me about was I was in high school cheating on a history test.
Yeah, who hasn't?
Yeah, but I got away with the cheating part, though. I wrote on the desk in pencil a couple answers I wasn't sure of. Well, I can't remember what it was. But I grabbed a cover sheet that had, you know, it was actual old science notes. That was the only piece of paper I'd claim. And here comes my history teacher, pops up, grabs a hold of the sheet of paper. Aha, I caught you. And I'm like, wait a minute, this is science notes. And here I am thumping with a chest, you know, heartbeat and stuff. Like, oh my God, I'm caught now. But I didn't. I actually got out, squirreled my way out of that one. But the question was, why did you write in blue on that science paper? And I thought, well, okay, fine detail. You know, what is this kind of, you know, what is this? I'm dead. So after that, I was transposed, popped back, and I was reliving first person being that little kid in high school. And had several encounters thereafter throughout my entire life. I don't think there was a month that I didn't really relive. But it was that type of deal up until the point where I was in Dunbar, Virginia, where I exited that particular point where I was in front of all these eyes. And they asked me about that Coca-Cola bottle cap, and I reached down as a little boy, like I'm doing right now, getting my ink. And, was looking at the ball cap, and they asked me, well, why did you pick up the ball cap? And I was like, I'm 5 years old. Why would it's shiny? It's a Coca-Cola ball cap. I can, I can taste the the Coca-Cola. Why else would I not pick it up? And then I kind of got real, I got really ticked off and started screaming and cussing, which I'm not going to do that on the show. But I was screaming and cussing, why is this, this can't be the afterlife. And I screamed and yelled and cussed, and I said, in the name of God, why am I here? And then all the eyes just went away, except for one pair of eyes off in the distance that was attached to a reptilian. Next to this large, probably the size of a cathedral set of doors. This big opal, whitish, kind of glowing and swirling in like a galaxy, spiral galaxy kind of pattern. And I get up to that. At this point, I had a body. I don't know why or how, and I haven't, I need to probably write about that. But I get up to this thing, and it reacted to me slightly, just slightly. Like, I don't want any part of you. And it kind of backs away. And it was next to this opal. Huge opal. And I was got curious. And I was like, well, I'm dead. What is he going to do? You going to make me more dead? Okay. Whatever. And the thing floats back off from me. Didn't walk. Didn't walk or anything. And we were surrounded in this abyss. Kind of deal. Except for the only light source is this opal thing that turns out was a gate. And this thing had reptilian eyes, the, you know, the vertical slits and stuff. So I get kind of curious about it. and I start touching this opal thing, and then I stick my hand into this opal, and it felt like warm, sticking hand in a bucket of warm paint.
Yeah.
It was the best description I could think of, the viscous, you know, kind of fluid, fluidity kind of deal, sensation. And either I was sucked into the opal, or the opal came at me and fell in and fell over top of me. And that was the end of that abyss scenario that I went through.
I thought that, I think it's interesting that you bring up reptilians and all of this, because I'm trying to figure out their association with all of this. I mean, the last thing any of us ever want to see is a reptilian, you know, upon our either our death or pre-death or whatever. What do you think? Where do you think this that came from? I mean, any idea at all? Were you really into reptilians before that all that situation happened, or is this something that you're like, holy crap, right?
Was I interested in UFOs? Slightly, with the UFO experience I had in 2007. Nothing reptilian at all. Did I see, UFO movies? Sure. Who hasn't seen Independence Day? Kind of deal. But nothing to that tune. Wasn't a hyper subject that I was really interested in. I had experienced through healthcare reviving people that had their own near-death experience and reported back to me about them.
Oh, really?
But I never really thought that I would have that and, you know, be able to come back and say, hey, Kelly, I had this incredible, robust experience that I would like to share my experience with. I never thought I would do that.
Well, what's interesting is, okay, so you've talked with people who have actually had similar experiences. And how did they react to, if you can recall any of this, how did they react to going, gee, what kind of medication did you give me help me here?
The first one I had an encounter with was a little lady that was actually at the second hospital that I worked for. And I can't remember the little lady's name. She's probably 80 pounds, maybe 90 pounds soaking wet. We were in probably the same area, Kentucky, Southwest Virginia area, but it was in the Virginia area. At best, this lady's education level would probably a tobacco farmer education level. So I had just started a shift there as a respiratory therapist, night shift. And the code was called, meaning, you know, rapid response team to ICU kind of deal. So I run and look at the monitor, and the lady is flatline, no heartbeat, no electrical conductivity in the heart, and start doing CPR. And here I am with an AMBU bag, performing the, you know, breathing for the lady. And long story short, we got her back. To my knowledge, that entire night she was never conscious. The next day, here I come back, and I've got ICU duty. So everything that has to take place, you know, that respiratory takes care of, which was EKGs, electroencephalograms. I did heart tracing. So, you know, when people have heart attacks or, you know, start parts or stuff like that, they usually do serial EKGs to see if they have a heart attack and how it is evolving over time. So I walk in, fully expecting that this lady has no clue who the heck I am. So I introduced myself, said, my name's Sean. I'm here to do an EKG only, explaining, you know, especially since it's female and I'm a male, and I have to explain, well, I've got to touch you here and put patches here. And she looks at me. She said, you were here last night. I was like, well, yeah. And of course, I'm naive at this whole thing. I said, well, how do you know that? I said, I was floating above the bed watching you. And she goes to explain to me what I was doing to her. You know, with, as a respiratory therapist, you know, unless you've actually seen a whole lot of dramatization of what goes on in the ER or whatever, mm-hmm. you might get an idea. But she was so detailed of what I was doing, what other people were doing. She said, you were helping me breathe with this little mask thing over my face and whatnot. And then she starts pointing out people that were in ICU mm-hmm. and said, this was a lady was doing this, and this lady was doing this, and this lady was doing this. And there was a lady that wasn't there that day that I was doing the EKG on her. Mm-hmm. And at that time, there were still old school nurses that wore the Nightingale hats and stuff.
Yeah.
And there was one or two that was on staff at that hospital that still wore the Nightingale hats. Mm-hmm. And this particular lady had the Nightingale hat and wore it religiously, mm-hmm. you know, every time she was on duty. So that little lady that had the nursing cap on is not here tonight. She was there taking notes. And I was like, how the heck does she know about that? Mm-hmm. Well, after that, I was working at another hospital, and I was stayed like 3 days away off duty and working in another hospital. I came back, and I was just curious and said, what happened to XYZ lady? Well, then here's what got really curious. She only accepted certain people into her room, which, you know, you either had to be family or friends, and only spoke to them once. And once she had her say with them, mm-hmm. she refused to see him again.
Oh, interesting.
And she would end the conversation with, "He's Jesus is about ready to come back and take me home." Mm-hmm. And she finally left after she had her piece said to all the people that she cared or loved mm-hmm. in her life. She refused anybody else other than staff. Hmm. to come see her. And so she died the day before. It took about 2 days for her to see everybody that she needed to see.
Wow.
So that was my first, hey, Sean, this ain't Kansas anymore. You right. stepped into something that you, like, had no clue what was going on.
Interesting. You know, a lot of us who may haven't ever had, or at least we don't think we've ever had a near-death experience, for many of us, it's people are always worried about where you go. Do you just blip out? Do you stay a while? Do you go up? Do you go down? What are your thoughts about that aspect of parting this world? Do you believe that people can go to heaven and describe the beautiful flowers and the pretty sky and all that sort of thing? Or have you experienced yourself going to what most people would perceive as hell? And
I've been at both places, heaven and hell.
All right.
And whatever you call that abyss, in between, whatever that was.
So describe... Purgatory,
maybe?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, I don't know. But I've been to heaven and hell, mm-hmm. and I prefer heaven over hell.
Hell any day.
Sure.
Well, describe your experience, because, of course, everybody has a different one, but you've been in both places from your experience. Describe hell, or at least the experience of hell, to us.
Okay. All right. I entered hell through the angel that, you know, escorted me everywhere.
Okay.
And one of the things I remember just about daily is this this quote from him. All you have to do is realize you're there and you're there.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Time, space, whatever. All you had to do is realize you're there and you're there.
Okay.
And every question I had asked of either this angel or God, mm-hmm. I instantly knew. And I was like, oh, what about this hell thing? So next thing I know, I'm in the, you know, not this abyss sort of thing. It was, if you ever watched the one of the movies where they did the Sodom and Gomorrah, mm-hmm. where they have, you know, the body turns to a pillar of salt.
Uh-huh, yeah.
You remember that scene?
Yeah, I've seen those. Mm-hmm.
So, as like shadows of these souls standing there.
Hmm.
And there were literally oceans of them.
Hmm.
Stacked on top of each other, you know, like their own individual whatever.
Yeah.
all over the place. And it was a dark, deep, foreboding, eerie, agonizing. It was uneasy to me. I did not fear. It sounds like it's about ready to storm outside. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
The angel, which instead of trying to explain to you, the angel that I, you know, wound up with, I nicknamed him Bob.
Yeah.
The angel that I experienced, you know, from what Bob, you know, I experienced other angels and whatnot. So, but Bob said, go up to one of these souls and connect with them. I connected with three of them, and each one of them left an imprint on me that I will never forget.
Okay.
First one was a little lady, young lady, that she was so freaking self-centered. I mean, everything revolved around her. Narcissist to the nth degree. Everything was owed to her. Her only worth was, you know, what she could get.
Yeah.
That was her worth. And she had a little child, a little boy. And I believe this was in New York City when this occurred. And she was in this apartment. And there was a balcony. And she was outside the balcony with her child. And the child was playing on it. And she was oblivious to it up to the point the child started falling over. The balcony, which was quite a ways up. And I saw this from first person, from her point of view. And then she found out what mattered to her at that point was that kid falling at her child. And she leaped after this child, trying to save his life. And in that, at that same time, you know, she grabbed a hold of the child, but she fell over the balcony along with him. And she relived this over and over and over again. And the it wasn't like she started all over without, you know, knowledge that this is happening. She started all over with, oh no, this is happening again. And it was like compounding each, and you know, she's reliving it each time she was going through this anguish of, I just realized I loved somebody other than myself. And I just killed the only person that I realized I loved. Was her child. And that was her hell.
Interesting. And you said there was two others that you also had to connect with?
I don't generally talk about the other two. I don't like jumping into that. That was, even though it was kind of gross to me to, you know, feel
all of that.
The other two, I may have spoke about one of the other fellows, but one I've never spoke about.
So you know what amazes me is why would somebody want to show you that? I mean, you don't come across to me as somebody who dabbled into terrible acts, you know, or anything like that. So why would someone want to show you hell?
I asked. And said, what about this hell thing everybody's talking about? Oh, just a second. Oh, sorry about that. My aunt was calling me and it popped up on my Mac.
It's okay.
Apologize for that.
That's right.
But I asked. Everything I asked was presented to me without restriction, without filter. So the lesson there was, from my perspective of the angel I was with, Bob, asked me, was, what's the difference of you being here in hell versus them being here in hell? So, well, first, I don't fear this place, but they, you know, they fear this place. They know they're in hell. And Bob said, they can't feel God anymore. God is totally outside of their privy, outside of their ever. They can scream God's name until little cows come home, they'll never feel God again. You can still feel God.
Okay.
And that was the lesson that I learned from that.
Interesting.
You were removed from God's presence.
Interesting. Now, you also went to heaven, right?
Oh, yeah.
All right. So what was your experience like in heaven?
We'll start at that opal gate thing.
Mm-hmm.
Once I left those reptilian present eyes or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It was like jumping into New York City.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you're out in the middle of the country.
Right.
You've never been to New York City before, which I've been to New York City a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually in New York City last time on Christmas Day. And it was a bustling place. You know, the person I was with, you either had to have a strong grip on her hand,
mm-hmm.
or you were separated in her, you know, unless you had a cell phone, you'd never find her again.
Mm-hmm.
Find the other person that you're with again.
Mm-hmm.
But I liken that to explain what I was going through. It was like every sensation I could go through, auditory, visual, you know, feeling, the whole gambit,
mm-hmm.
Heat and cold. Silence to extreme, you know, auditory experiences. Being in the middle of New York City, and I can remember feeling like I was in a fetal position at the end of it. It was I was getting warmer, but colder at the same time. But I kind of got used to the sensation.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I was being. I'd hate to use this because I'm not such a big thing about the well. Sometimes I am, sometimes I'm not. I was kind of being pushed up to another vibrational level.
Yeah,
I hate using that because I sort of kind of look at it from that perspective, but not exactly. But, you know, kind of gives you an idea.
Okay.
But I woke up, and at that point, I did not have a body. I was this ethereal, massive spiritual energy.
Yeah.
And my ability to perceive everything around me was jacked up on steroids. I could see behind me. I can see below me, above me. So say if you were there, I could see around you in 360.
Yeah.
And then even inside of you. And then I see this ethereal angel in front of me.
Yeah.
Which I will refer to as Bob.
Yeah.
He didn't have a name, but at that time, he was so familiar to me. It was like having a familiarity with somebody you loved.
Right.
So your loved one, your husband, your wife, your sister, your brother, that kind of deal. When you walk, you know, you're in a room by yourself,
mm-hmm.
and your back is to like the door.
Right.
Yeah. And they walk in. And the only clue you've got is that feeling from them that, hey, that's my wife.
Right.
Kind of deal. That was this angel's name, and I refer to him as Bob, just not have to go through that explanation every time.
Yeah.
And Bob did not auditorily speak to me. It was like mind speak.
Mm-hmm.
But it was not speaking like we're doing right now. It was like instant, I'll give you everything you need to know about whatever it is you need to know. But I do remember Bob saying, I'm here to help you remember,
mm-hmm.
not help you to acclimatize yourself to this mm-hmm. place or whatever,
okay.
help you to remember.
Okay.
And then after that point, everything seems like it either happened all at once, like a snap of a finger.
Yeah.
When I'm writing about these experiences, it's like I can feel five or six things happen at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But I've got to focus on one thing. And my best friend, Julie, I actually told her about how I write about these experiences. So this is so difficult because I'm like a dog and a squirrel.
Yeah.
You know, I'm writing about, say, that train track incident.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also, I could feel like I was in front of the devil.
Right.
Or I was watching something else happening, occurring in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And snap a finger, I'm off chasing a rabbit.
Yeah.
Another memory that was occurring at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, did everything happen at once? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Time got to the point where it was there, but it was not as, you know, finite, you know, not as foreboding like it. Time progresses forward always
right.
in our existence now. There it was like you controlled this omnidirectional fan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to kind of dumb it down.
Yeah.
You can make it go forward, backwards, up, down, left, right, swirl, you know, at the whim. You know, you can span space and time without a doubt, just with thought.
Yeah, interesting.
So, but I went all over the place. It was incredible. I spent lifetimes. I can remember seeing through an angel's eyes,
mm-hmm.
watching him being in awe
mm-hmm.
at God's wonder, watching suns, stars mm-hmm. live and die.
Mm-hmm.
Billions of them. He watched them, and he was like,
mm-hmm.
in such, you know, awe at it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So, how much time was I there? I don't know.
1 second, probably. You know, it's really hard to say because time, especially, well, at least from what I understand it, when you're deceased, I don't think there is any time. I don't know. No one will ever understand this until they die. And when you die, you can't really, you know, send back a message and say, yeah, here's what really is going on. That's the mystery that still remains for each person mm-hmm. when they pass away. You had talked before the show about something to do with having a debate with God and potentially 8 people. Would you go and explain to everybody about your meeting with God?
The meeting with God that I had, mm-hmm. which, you know, the weird thing is people don't ask me what God, well, I've only had one person yeah. ask me what God looks
what
like.
Look like? Mm-hmm.
And God is everything, ethereal energy to a mm-hmm. certain extent, but it was pulsing through everything.
Mm-hmm.
So there's anything and everywhere, not to a point to say, hey, he's sitting on that chair. No, I didn't see that.
Mm-hmm.
But I had several conversations with God. He
mm-hmm.
showed me the different levels of heaven.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of my near-death experience, I can remember another opal gate
mm-hmm.
at the end of this, you know, experience. And God's like, Sean, it's time for you to go on
mm-hmm.
to go to another level of heaven or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I was like, then all of a sudden, a flash of these 8 people pop up in my head. One was my brother, Travis.
Okay.
He, God rest his soul, died in September of 2019.
Yeah.
He was there.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. The woman that I talked about earlier, her name's Shauna, by the way,
mm-hmm.
That I had dreams about throughout my entire mm-hmm. life.
Yeah.
She was there.
Mm-hmm.
And along with a couple, you know, 6 more people,
mm-hmm.
2 more, I'm not going to name their names or anything like that, but 4 of them I knew, mm-hmm. knew of, you know, without a doubt, and 4 I'd never met before in that life at mm-hmm. all. And I sat there and argued over each one of them. I've got to go back and do this with this particular person.
Mm-hmm.
I got to do this with this particular person. I've got to show this person this. And each conversation, each argument I had with God about this particular person, God would end the argument with is just wait a moment, their life will be lived in full and they'll be with us right here in just a moment. And I, now that I've written about it, so I wrote probably 100 some pages about this conversation. I'm still not done with that one. But how can I say this? I lost my train of thought. The argument, yeah, after writing about it, I realized I wasn't really arguing with God. I was convincing myself to come back.
Right.
Reasons to come back.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't that, you know, God, I'm going to twist your arm until you tell me that I can come back.
Yeah.
That decision already made. I was just making the decision for myself.
You had mentioned when we had spoke before the show, these mm-hmm. individuals that you, 4 of them you knew and 4 of them you did not know.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that you did know are, let's say, with the exception of your brother, are mm-hmm. the other ones still alive to this day?
Yes.
So absolutely. How is it that this is where I get a little bit curious. What? Okay, so if they're still alive to this day, and you saw mm-hmm. them as you were essentially passing away or had passed away and was in the process of coming back, how is it then that you saw or spoke with each of these individuals who had not passed away yet? That's my question.
I did not have a conversation with them. I saw them as they were living.
Oh, saw them as they were living. Okay.
Yeah. And they were there, I guess, ethereally, mm-hmm. kind of. I saw a representation of them.
Yeah.
And I argued with God. Well, argue with myself. Yeah. But I was arguing with God
mm-hmm.
to say, I'll pick on my brother since he's already passed.
Yeah.
You know, I did not know at the time when I woke up, but at the time in the near-death experience, I knew that he was going to have a bout with cancer. Mm-hmm. I knew he was going to pass when I shouldn't have known.
Yeah.
And I know that, and it's argumentative, you know, you lived through the whole thing and now you're writing about it, Sean, and you're mm-hmm. telling a story about it, which, all right, I get that. Yeah. No big deal. You either believe it or you don't.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I had this same argument. I had this near-death experience, but I don't have any proof of it in my word that I had this near-death experience.
Right, yeah, yeah.
What I had to do with Travis, which when I come back, and after I was released from the hospital after 3 months,
mm-hmm.
He and I were in his truck, and we went to this little place to pick up deep-fried catfish nuggets or whatever
mm-hmm.
for, like a welcome home, Sean, mm-hmm. you know, kind of deal.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually said, Travis, I had this experience I want to tell you about it. He said, I don't want to know a thing about it. All I need to know about it is, do you believe in God or not?
Mm-hmm.
I said, absolutely, more than ever. It's not even belief. It is absolute
mm-hmm.
knowledge
mm-hmm.
kind of deal. And that's all I need to know. And mm-hmm. that was it. He was one of these guys where he asked you a question. It was yes, no, or maybe so.
Yeah.
And if you tried to go down the maybe so path mm-hmm. to explain,
yeah.
So I didn't ask you. I just wondered yes, no, or maybe so. That's mm-hmm. all I want. And that was his personality.
Interesting.
That's how he's, that kind of explains why he didn't have any kind of paranormal stuff. He was so cut and dry.
Yeah, logical. I call them logical brains. I mean, they're very cut and dry, very logical. It either is or is not. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. Curious. Okay, so for many of you that are watching this, many of you are listening to this, but for those of you who are seeing this on Paraflix, there was a picture that Sean had sketched out that was shown in the introduction of this just before we started our interview today. So Sean, you met all these people, except there's one that's still hanging in the lurch, and that's this young lady that everybody, you'll have seen the sketch by now. Can you talk a little mm-hmm. bit about that sketch that you drew?
The sketch. Up till this point, which as of right now, I still have no clue who this person is, who this lady is.
Hmm.
Up to that point, I know all seven of everyone that I explained.
Mm-hmm.
I could pick up a phone and, dial the number and say, hey, this is Sean, and they'll know exactly who they're talking to.
Mm-hmm.
But the eighth person has kind of been a limbo.
Hmm.
And quite honestly, up until the seventh person, I didn't tell until about, I'm going to say a month and a half, 2 months ago. But I knew who he was up until that point. And when I told that last person, and every time I've explained to them, hey, Sean, this, or whoever it was, mm-hmm. I expect them to come back, well, you're crazy. I don't want to have anything to do with you.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy that I'm really good friends with, he mm-hmm. said, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
What's my message from God?
Yeah. Yeah.
But it don't work like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
not with me, but
yeah.
Yeah. But everybody that the eighth person, I have no clue who it was up until about, I would say, 2 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
I started getting these flashes of I didn't even know if it was a male or female.
Yeah.
Up to that point, there were three males definitely that I come back to help.
Mm-hmm.
And then five females.
Mm-hmm.
Or four females.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, four females. And then three males. And a couple of my friends come back and say, well, I think it's a female. And I'm like, oh, well, that's all fine, Danny. You think it's female. I have no clue who it is. I just, started having dreams of this soul coming. And I actually sketched him out. I may have shared the sketch of nine figures in this sketch.
Mm.
One was an angel, and the other eight were the other eight souls that I argued about.
Do you have that sketch? I don't have that.
I don't have. Yeah, I've got that. I've got that sketch.
Are you able to share it at all? I mean, if it's a really clear one, it'll work really good for this program.
Yeah, it's. You can tell that they're figures. You can tell that they're wearing cloaks, kind of deal. But the weird thing about it was I didn't realize it when I was sketching it, and I showed it to my best friend Julie, which. She's one of the eight.
Mm-hmm.
She said, is the eighth one there in the middle?
Mm.
Kind of dark. And I was like, yeah. She said, this person is the only one looking at you from the perspective of you're viewing the drawing.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy cow, you're right. So what that means, I don't know.
Yeah.
Other than that is a feature of that sketch that I didn't really realize until I sketched it and it was pointed out by Julie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I started had a series of dreams. And actually, the day that I had the first flash that I had to absolutely sketch that face out. Mm-hmm. Was I was actually writing about the last person I just discussed about, saying, hey, buddy, you're one of the eight people that I came back to help.
Okay.
And I was writing about that person. All of a sudden, it was like, flash.
Mm-hmm.
She's sitting across the table, which I was out on my back porch, typing away. Sitting there looking at me, and I'm like, wow. Okay, so you are a female.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it was like an itch. I sketched her twice up until Julie come to me and said, Sean, you're getting obsessive about this. I was like, I know I am. I was like, how the heck do I stop this? She said, no, pray and see what happens. So I prayed about it, and then all of a sudden, that angel, Bob, that I referred to, comes to me in dreams, says, stop looking for her, stop looking for her, stop looking for her, three times in a row. She's already found you. She's just waiting to see if you are who she's been dreaming about. And at that point, that itch just went away. Every once in a while, I'll see her in a dream.
Yeah.
Or two. And I don't have a wake up and like, should I write about her or not?
Yeah.
No, not really. Well, but the whole itch just left me at the point when the angel said, just stop looking for her.
Well, don't you find it? I still find it a little bit, curious as to what is the connection, what's the message, what's the reason? If you have to help her, what does she need help with? I just find that kind of mysterious. So, of course, anyone watching this video today, if you know who this person is or if it's you, reach out to Sean, or do you think they said they already found you though, right? But
The angel said they've already found me.
Yeah.
I've got my suspicions. There's a couple of three people that I think might be.
Mm-hmm.
I have no clue.
Yeah.
Other than the angel said, this person will tell you that they are the person.
Okay.
So I have... other than faith, that it will be revealed to me.
Yep.
I honestly, here's the other thing that has come to me and slapped me in the face. Is like, Okay, why did you forget all these other, you remember all these other seven people, why this eighth person?
Yeah.
Up until probably 10 months ago.
Yeah.
I only knew three of them.
Hmm.
And it was kind of slowly, it's like waking up and, you know, and remembering like, oh yeah, or kind of stuff. And I've actually asked the angel that I'm with in my dreams,
mm-hmm.
saying, okay, why am I removed from these memories, which I, you know, I've had a long discussions with people that, you know, quiz me about my near-death experience, and I've talked at great length in private to certain people,
mm-hmm.
and at that point, you know, I could only remember up to the point where, like, one of the conversations I've had with one person asked me about the devil constantly, mm-hmm. like, tell me about the devil conversation. Mm-hmm. I'd get up to the point where I wouldn't remember anything,
yeah.
repeat the same story up to the point where, click,
yeah,
there's nothing there other than the conversation with the devil is. You'll remember this conversation in full when it's time to remember it.
Oh, great.
So I didn't remember anything past that, but this person kept asking me about it constantly. Mm-hmm. You know, every time we had a conversation,
mm-hmm.
person would ask me about it.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, I still don't remember. It's like you walking up to the door and knowing there's something behind this door and you grab a hold of it, jiggle the handle, and it's locked. You're like, no.
Right.
Can't go there.
Hmm.
But 144 days ago when I started, I kind of delved off of who the eighth person is.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly don't know who it is. I've got my suspicions. Are they one of the three? I don't know. Could it be somebody that have no clue about? Absolutely. Possibly. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly.
Well, most importantly, if you ever do come face to face with this individual, then what? I mean, that's the next question. Then what? You know? Hi, it's you. Here's your sketch.
Then,
you know?
Then I will start remembering what I need to do.
Oh, what you need to, yeah, exactly. So let's shift to our last few minutes here because we're going on a doubleheader, which is really good. I want to shift to just a couple little mini stories that you and I can at least share from storytelling episodes with at least other people or whatnot. And I know we talked about this before. And then we'll get into having Sean tell everybody about how he can be contacted and how you can listen to his shows and the whole 10 yards on that. And it'll also be in the show notes at the end of this show. So very fascinating to hear your story, Sean, and very fascinating to just be part of your experience overall. So let's do what is called like just a little mini bite here. And the first one I'm going to throw out is the story we talked about just before the show began, missing time and the person who was driving. Give us that story as told by that person just to enlighten people a little bit more about the UFO / extraterrestrial missing time experience.
Okay, well, I have a show that's a call-in show, and I kind of based it off of Art Bell. It was call-in shows, you know, unscreened calls, and mm-hmm. I had unscreened calls.
Mm-hmm.
And this gentleman calls me from High Point, North Carolina, or thereabouts,
mm-hmm.
and says, 23 hours ago, I was at a gas station, High Point, North Carolina.
Okay.
Left High Point, North Carolina, the gas station, and was driving to, I think, return to his house or his daughter's house.
Yeah.
And he sees this flash of blue light.
Mm.
And 2 hours later, he's like 20 miles down the road.
Mm.
Still driving, mind you, with no memory of driving the 20 miles.
Yeah.
But 2 hours had passed, but it was instantly transposed from the point where he left and got flashed to 20 miles down the road.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that there was no change in the gas hand on his car.
Mm-hmm.
No odometer change either.
Mm-hmm.
But he was 20 miles down the road. Now, he has substantial, or came back, not substantial. Yeah. He came back and called my show 3 or 4 months later, okay, and said he was so disturbed by that, he went back,
yeah,
and had all kinds of tests done, said, did I have a stroke? Did I have a seizure,
yeah,
or whatever?
Yeah.
Turns out that he was nominal. He, you know, nothing was wrong with him to cause that missing time.
Yeah. And, yeah, go ahead.
But, yeah, he, that was just so surreal that somebody would call me 23 hours and say, hey, I trust you enough to share this story, which, mm-hmm, I kind of say for every one story that somebody gets the nerve to call in, mm-hmm, there's a, probably 20 other people that are sitting there like, well, I've got one just like that.
Mm-hmm.
But they can't get the nerve up to call in.
Now, a lot of people are very hesitant about, mm-hmm, actually even being on, you know, it's the same when I ask people to be on the show or even be on a podcast. It's like, how would you feel about sharing your stories or whatever? No. There's a lot of reasons for people to, that when they back away, you know, some of them are worried about how this might be reflective on them if it involves their work. I can tell you right now that I did not come forth with a lot of my paranormal anything. I've got 11 books on Amazon until I actually retired from college teaching and all the things that go along with it. Then I decided, mm-hmm, I don't have anything to prove to anybody anymore or whatever, and then I just blasted out and decided to just get it all out of my system. That might be a reason, or they might, you know, people also think people are crazy. But there is a story that's similar to that that I heard of, which was from a very credible person named Barbara Lamb, who was driving down the Colorado coast, windy road, whatever. Light, a beam hit her. Same type of thing. I don't know if it was blue, but it definitely was a beam. And she lost about a couple hours of time. And I think if I have her story correct, I mean, she didn't crash or anything, but she still found herself on that same highway driving, but with an immense loss of time. But ever since that point, she, or even before, but especially since that point, she started having a lot more abilities with the extraterrestrial and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you know, that goes along with that. And reptilians, which is when you brought up the reptilian thing, she brought that up a lot, them even showing up in her house. And she's done this stuff for a long, long time. But yeah, that's an interesting story. And I would wonder to this day if the gentleman who called in, and maybe he'll call in again, maybe he'll hear this show posted, or at one point he'll say, oh, that's me. And maybe he'll do both of us a favor by being in touch with you and letting you know if anything changed his life significantly after that point. Wow. Well, my goodness, we have done a doubleheader here. And I think that very fascinating, Sean. I could talk to you for a long time here. But I think right now we need to give everyone some information about how they can find you, hear you, be part of your show, stuff like that. And I'll have it in the show notes at the end. So what would you like to relate to people about you?
Well, you can find me over on IamDarkWaters.com. Mm-hmm. That's the website. Or you can go to one of two YouTube channels that I currently am a part of. My own personal one is Chasing the Truth, Sean G, S-H-A-W-N-G. Mm-hmm. I have been doing two shows over there, but I kind of, you know, Nick's doing one show. But right now I'm doing Wednesdays there, mm-hmm, at 8 p.m. Eastern.
Okay.
I believe. Yeah, 8 p.m. Central. Excuse, mm-hmm, me. Central. And then 7 p.m. Central over on the Dark Waters channel on the YouTube, along with the Dark Waters Paranormal Radio app, mm-hmm, and the Fringe.fm, mm-hmm, on Saturdays, 7 p.m. Central. Mm-hmm. And I usually do about 2 to 3 hour shows. Sometimes if it's a really hopping night and the lines keep going, I've done up to 5 hours on a show.
My God.
One call right after another, and, you know, there's no rhyme or reason why it gets so popular one night, and I'll have another night I get 3 or 4 calls.
Yeah.
You know, for a 2-hour period. And there's some nights it's like, okay, And everybody that's in the chat, live chat, and I'm responding to live chat in either war situation, is like, keep going, keep going. We love the material. And it's amazing how many people are sitting on such supernatural events that they find it worthy to call me and tell their story.
Yeah. Well, trust is part of that there, Sean. So, and check the moon phase next time when you have a real busy night. Maybe the moon phase has something to do with it. I know that a lot of things happen in hospitals and also with the police and everything like that when we have clear full moon night. So it's kind of an interesting thing. Check the moon phase. So,
and I will get the lunatics come out.
Yeah, the lunatics all come out to play. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, thank you so very much for being a part of this. And again, everyone check the show notes and or rewind this and listen to the ending part to find him. Otherwise, thank you, Sean. And I hope to have you back sometime again in the late future.
Well, thank you, Kelly, for having me.
No problem. Thanks. Pleasure. Very much. No problem.